He is the guy who just got dumped via Morse code. Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Wits Challenge Round coverage of Last Comic Standing here on Rob Has a Podcast. I'm very excited. I thought this was the most fun episode of Last Comic Standing yet. This is what I thought we were going to be talking about when we started podcasting about Last Comic Standing. So I'm very excited to be here with a man who, as far as I know, does not have a glass eye. Here is Mike Bloom.
Oh, actually, Rob, from now on, can you refer to me as Dick Stifley?
Dick Stifley. You got it.
Oh, my God. That's my anchor name.
Or, as I should say, give it up for Mr. Mike Bloom!
Yes, we saw the return of Loud JB. No transition between the big venues and the small venues for Mr. Smoove.
Yes, absolutely not. Oh my God, it was a veritable Curb Your Enthusiasm reunion on this show between JB Smoove and Wanda Sykes and now Cheryl Hines. It's such a it's almost like it's a pretty fun reunion show.
All this episode needed was Jeff Garland in the background during the sketches, just like shaking his head in disappointment.
Yeah. We have to watch the Goldbergs for that.
Exactly.
Okay. Anyway, I thought this was a really, really fun show. I'm very excited to talk about this. Oh, I was so nervous for my guy, Rodman.
I know. Rodman, we'll talk about it later in the episode, but Rodman, unfortunately, with the way the immunities worked out, he kind of got put in a sticky situation. But I mean, going into it, I was pretty confident that he was going to be able to work his way out unless he completely bombed.
Imploded.
Which, which he wouldn't at all.
And then I got more confident for Rodman after I saw Jimmy and Ida's set also.
Yeah, and especially the comments they were getting as well. Like, Jimmy got some pretty positive comments, but Ida got pretty ravaged by both the judges and the audience at the improv.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we're going to talk about everything from the immunity challenge to the final showdown. Do they have a name for this on Last Comic Standing? The three comic face-off? What do they call this?
Well, it's typically called the head-to-head. This was the only example of the head-to-head-to-head. From now on, the eliminations are only going to be one person versus another.
Okay, and why did we need to do a double elimination? Because we spent so much time in the audition rounds?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I guess they only wanted to do three challenge episodes. My guess, and again, these are very loose predictions. I'm no Melisandre here, especially with NBC kind of pulling out the rug from under us with this format. But I feel like we're going to do three more challenge episodes, which will then bring things down to five. And then from there, it'll go to the live shows. So I guess they just wanted to get it down to five and only wanted to do four challenges. So they thought, let's just do a double elimination right off the bat.
Okay. Well, I loved this episode. The challenge round was so fun to me. I felt like I was watching an episode of The Apprentice. That's what it really felt like, especially, well, Celebrity Apprentice, because
yeah, that's this episode was so Celebrity Apprentice to me, specifically the parts of Celebrity Apprentice when they have to make commercials or give like the Medieval Times task they did a couple years ago. I mean, I put these sketches probably on the level of Gary Busey and the Mechanical Dog of hot messes in NBC.
Sketch. SKETCH. Sucking, killing, and I wish I could Busey on the fly like Gary Busey.
Yeah, I've gone forward and I will say for probably a long, long time that Gary Busey and the Mechanical Dog is one of the funniest things I've ever seen on TV.
A mechanical dog? What will they think of next? And not to get into too much Celebrity Apprentice, but did the Amazon, whatever their video on demand thing is, did they totally rip off that for their commercial?
Well, there was no talk about letting nature take its course, so I'm assuming they censored Gary Busey a little bit.
Oh my God. All right. So that's all very fun stuff. All right. Let's jump into this and talk about everything that happened in the episode. But this is going to be a lot of fun. By the way, Mike, did you see on Sunday night, NBC is doing a 2 hours of stand-up from Last Comic Standing that you may have missed?
Yeah, it's a weird... I mean, it's basically a version of back when Survivor used to do recaps ending, you know, a few years ago. It's their own version of a recap episode because of the holiday. Apparently, they're airing all new interviews with the final eight, and they're airing, quote-unquote, the top 50 funniest jokes of Last Comic Standing. And they're, I guess they're going to show a lot of unaired material from the top 100 people that got montaged.
Okay. Is there a show on Thursday? They're not, like, changing any of the plans for 4th of July weekend, are they?
I believe they are, actually. I feel like we would have gotten an advertisement for it. At the end of the episode, it seemed like they were just advertising for this Sunday recap. So much like Survivor used to do the recap around Thanksgiving, I think Last Comic Standing is doing this Sunday episode and then doing next Thursday.
Oh, okay. So there actually is not an episode on July 3rd?
I don't believe so. I mean, you got to save Ellen for the non-holiday crowd.
Yeah, let me just take a look real quick on my go-to epguides.com.
They've done me wrong before.
Sometimes they do also. They with the season of The Amazing Race, they were telling me it was ending like a week earlier than it actually was. But let me just, we'll take a look real quick and see what we come up to. Let me just get take one look, peek with my glass eye and see. It looks like, apparently they will not have a show on July 3rd, according to this.
Yeah, so, I think NBC also has their own, one of the major networks has their own, like, fireworks celebration concert on July 3rd, I think. So they might be doing that instead.
Okay. All right. So that is coming up this upcoming Sunday over the weekend. So, what are we going to do?
That's a good question. I mean, we could kind of do an ad hoc, like, you know, we could watch it and then see if it's worth recapping.
Let's do that because if it's, you know, 2 hours of filler, I don't know how much we're going to have to podcast about the people that already moved on. But yeah. If there's anything of value there, Mike and I will get together and podcast about it.
Yeah, something for you all to enjoy before your holiday weekend.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into talking about all of this from Universal Studios. The teams got to go on a tour of Universal. Did you know, full disclosure, the parent company of NBC is Universal?
Oh, really? I thought NBC Universal was just like a pretty name.
Oh, yes. So we got to make such great use of the Universal Studios, and we got to drive around golf courts, and that was like probably the most boring part of the episode.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what merit people were getting out of, like, here's some comics driving around the lot of Universal Studios because they weren't at Universal Studios for the rest of the time. It was kind of like back in, I think, season 6, maybe instead, again, they got rid of this house element, basically. And so instead of showing stuff from the house, they would do, like, not necessarily challenges, but little bits in the beginning of the episode. Like, one of the episodes, the comics did, like, a funny calendar shoot. So it wasn't really a challenge. It was just something to kind of fill time.
Yeah.
So part of me feels like that was kind of...
Kind of like the real world.
Yeah, they just had exactly.
Stuff to do. So just to give a little insight into, like, the layout of Universal. So they went to the theme park and drove around in golf carts, and then they went to the City Walk, which is sort of like the outside pavilion attached to Universal Studios. So it's like there's a bunch of, like, restaurants and things like little shops and stuff. So you can go to City Walk and sort of like have dinner or something like this at one of these places, but not go to the theme park. And that's where the John Lovitz Comedy Theater is, who's one of those things in sort of like this big outdoor mall at the City Walk. So that's, you know, they were still at Universal, but not inside the theme park.
Okay. I was wondering, because it seemed like they said, you know, quote unquote, on the lot. But then I saw things like the Jaws ride. I was like, I don't think Universal Studios lot where they film things has a Jaws ride readily available.
Yeah. So they were at the Universal Studios, and then that's where they drew the teams, and then they went to the Upright Citizens Brigade, which is sort of like in East Hollywood, and then later in the episode, I don't know if this was all the same day, it must have been a long day, it must not have been the same night, because they would have done the comedy club at night, right?
Yeah, I'm assuming they would have. I'm assuming.
But Jimmy Schubert was saying how tired he was, so he made it seem like it was the same day, or maybe he's just old.
Maybe he's still jet lagged.
From what
he hates flying.
But it's all in L.A. and he's from L.A.
Oh, that's true. Maybe you're right. He's old. He's tired. He needs his prunes.
Anyway, so and then the improv is back in like West Hollywood area. So all right. So we ended up with the teams finding out that they had to perform a sketch. And Mike, I know that there's nothing that's more creative or fun than a talk show sketch parody.
Yep, especially a talk show sketch parody that they didn't write either, which is interesting. I mean, I think it's probably the most... These challenges are really interesting between like this one and the Ellen one. They're really testing to see if these comics can represent themselves well and can do well with this development side of the prize, which they never have had before. So it's cool. It's a challenge that makes sense, but I don't know what the merit is in saying, here's a completely written sketch, but you get to pick your costume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there's also a performance element to it.
Yeah. Yeah,
which,
I guess
which a lot of them really blew.
Absolutely. Well, Cheryl put it best. And I mean, I've done both stand up and I've done tons more improv and sketch. But she's very correct in terms of when you're doing stand up, your partner, your mirror is the audience, and that's who you're feeding off of, who you're building off of. But in improv and sketch, it's all about who you're with. You need to gel well with them, especially in a situation where cue cards are present, and you need to, as she said, make your partner look good. If you make your partner look good, it's a symbiotic relationship. But unfortunately, and understandably so, a lot of these people are so in the stand-up mindset that all they're thinking about is like, I need to be funny. Let's make sure that I'm the shining star in this group.
Yeah. Cheryl Hines' advice could apply to podcasting too. Podcasting is listening, Mike.
What'd you say?
So that's part of it. That's part of it too. Okay. So Cheryl Hines, gets everybody set up. You have to either open your peanut brittle can and if you got a flower or you got snakes, were those so much snakes or were they like balloons?
I don't know. This was like a Dennis the Menace type of challenge picking. I want to see that carry over to Survivor.
Yeah.
Like get rid of the painted eggs. I want Jet to say, all right, pick up your cans. If a snake comes out, you're on this tribe. If you get a flower, you're on this tribe. And if you get the whoopee cushion, you go to Exile Island.
Why would a whoopee cushion mean Exile Island?
Because nobody likes someone with gas. So you have to spend some time on your own.
Okay, well, ideally, if you do have gas, it's the perfect place to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So the teams ended up being, so we have the flower team and then the snakes team. The flower team would be renamed The Business, and the snake team would be renamed The Sketchy Snakes. Which team name did you prefer?
Well, Sketchy Snakes reminded me of some sort of something out of like Legends of the Hidden Temple, though it also had like a really promiscuous term. The Business... It just reminds me of, like, again, we're going back to Celebrity Apprentice, where, like, one team would come up with, like, the stupidest name, and the other one, like, actually takes themselves seriously and comes up with this actual name.
Going into this, which team did you think had the advantage?
I definitely think... It's interesting, because I think The Business had, again, like, the business side of it. I think they had the experience, but I think the Sketchy Snakes had the modesty. And that's ultimately kind of what it came down to, was that The Business was full of a lot of headstrong veterans who kind of thought that their word was the word of comedy God. So they're like, it doesn't matter what you think, I'm going to go off and do my own thing. Sketchy Snakes seemed like they wanted to work together more.
Yeah, the Sketchy Snakes definitely seemed like they were flexible, whereas The Business was like, no, this is how it is.
Yeah, exactly. They were, especially since you have Jimmy who is a big, has done a lot of acting before, and Rocky's done a fair amount as well. And you have the kind of the two of them saying, like, this is how it goes. It's not going to lend well for a team situation, which is why I'm assuming that's the reason why NBC wanted to do it, because team situations are always a great, great source of drama.
Do you think that the business made a mistake by letting Jimmy be the anchor and not Rodman?
I mean, I feel like it was sort of like a Bart Simpson paradox, like you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. If they said, okay, Rodman's going to be the anchor, then you're going to have a pissed off Jimmy Schubert on your team. And like, I don't want to know what a pissed off Jimmy Schubert is going to do to that team, because, you know, and even an invigorated Jimmy Schubert brought that team down in the first place. So like, who knows what would have happened if he got relegated to being the burn victim.
Okay, well, let's talk about the two versions of the sketch. Now, did you think it hurt the business to go second? Like, was it the same audience basically having to watch the same sketch twice? Like, I know from, like, doing auditions and stuff, like, when you watch a performance, somebody, like, do the scene the first time, it's like, okay, and then you watch people do it the second time, unless they real, like, it does get, like, a little bit like, okay, I can't wait for this to be over the second time you're seeing it, unless the person is really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, I think they might have, I mean, granted, had they done really well, I think it still would have been okay, because as we saw, the Sketchy Snakes definitely missed some jokes. So had the business had their act together, I think it could have been okay. I wonder what the time difference was between the two, because if it was like the Sketchy Snakes left and then like 5 minutes later the business came on, that would have been very, very unfair.
Yeah. So who did you think was the MVP and who was the LVP for the Sketchy Snakes?
So the Sketchy Snakes LVP has got to be my man Lachlan Patterson, who I'm still not high on whatsoever. He's at the bottom of my power ranking.
He was terrible.
Yeah.
He was so bad.
He was like, you know, you have actors on SNL like Robert De Niro who like is pretty awful, but at least can read the cue cards. He just can't, you know, he couldn't do the two things at once. For a second, it looked like Monroe was going to be that guy, but Monroe, like, got his act together and did a fantastic job.
Yeah. Did they ad-lib at all? Because was it the same exact script? Because when Lachlan Patterson says to Monroe Martin, based his character, he's like, you're such an enigma. Like, obviously, that line wasn't in the script because Jimmy Schubert didn't say it to Ida.
I don't know about that, though, because we did see different parts, with the exception of, like, one little part. We saw very different parts of the sketch. I mean, part of me wanted to see the entire sketch released in full just to see how much of it. Because I agree, I don't know how much of it was ad-libbed. I'm assuming in a sketch challenge, Cheryl Hines or someone would discourage them from ad-libbing. Because as we all know from someone like Lorne Michaels, one of the sketch greats, horribly frowns upon ad-libbing and, you know, fires Damon Wayans from the show for ad-libbing
the
sketch.
With the Damon Wayans thing, that's way more than an ad-libbing. He did his own. He, like, invented a new sketch.
That cop would have done well on this sketch.
I think that the rule on the ad-lib in something like this, it's like, it's a gamble. It better work, and it definitely worked, that joke with Lachlan and Monroe Martin.
Yeah, and to answer your question, I would say the MVP was either, I'd say Nikki did a really nice job with it, or I know he was only on for like a second, but I thought Joe was like perfectly cast as this burn victim.
Yeah.
And the line, you know, I guess my sense of humor must have burned up in the fire, I think that worked a lot better for someone with a sense of humor and a sense of deadpan like Joe than someone like Rodman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought they were both very good. Nikki probably got the most credit on the show. She did really, really good. Is it fair to say that Mr. Patterson locked up?
Yes, he was not in lock and step.
Yes. Okay. So did you like that Licorice Lips?
Thank you. Thank you. what were the anchor's names? Royce. Thank you, Royce Bentley, for that for that lovely compliment.
Okay, so when Ida and Jimmy Schubert were together, first off, Jimmy Schubert was being like a total a-hole from before they even went on. He was like screaming at the cue card guy, or at least like being a douche to the cue card guy before they even went on.
Yeah, he sounded like, you know, you've seen videos where they leave the camera on before commercial breaks of actual news shows, and you hear the news anchor like kind of be an ass. The movie Anchorman makes fun of it.
Like, but Chris Berman on, there's like a YouTube video of him. I think, you know, Bill O'Reilly has a couple of those.
So Jimmy Schubert actually seemed like that news anchor. So I guess he was getting in character of being a reporter. But I agree, he was totally being a diva. And then you have, on top of that, you have, you know, Ida kind of being a little blunt in the middle of the rehearsal, basically saying like, okay, this isn't funny. We're taking this too seriously. So you're dealing with that, and then you have these other three guys that are kind of just like, oh boy, this is a train wreck.
Who was the worst in the sketch? I'm like Trump in the boardroom. Mike, who was the worst? Who was the what does he say? Who
if you were me,
who would you fire?
I mean, it's got to be Jimmy. Granted, Ida made a very interesting choice in choosing to make her anchor character like an alcoholic, almost like a Kristen Wiig playing Kathy Lee on SNL. But Jimmy violated these sacred rules of sketch comedy or improv in general. He was talking over people. He wasn't even looking at the people he was talking to most of the time. You know, Ida definitely flubbed a lot, and Rodman did have a really awkwardly staged entrance with him in a chair that functioned as a wheelchair.
Yeah, but, just sort of like some difficulty with a gag that they were trying to do?
That's exactly what I feel like. Since we saw that Joe was mobile, I think that Rodman just said, "Hey, wouldn't it be funny if DC rolled me out?"
Or did he say, could it be funny if my character was in a wheelchair and then DC Benny can roll me on the stage?"
Okay, Rodman, you've been asking me for like 5 minutes. Yes, you can do it.
Yeah, I like DC Benny tonight, I have to say.
Yeah, he was very solid on his team. I was going to ask you, what did you think of the names of these characters?
You know, I didn't have them in my notes. What were the names of the characters?
So you have the anchors, Royce Bentley and Dick Stifley, which was like, those were a little odd just because one is a pun on cars and then one is just a very vulgar joke.
Yes.
And I forgot the name of the hitman with the cookbook, but there was the director's name was Angus Corgione. And the victim was named Lance Jenkins.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, part of me also wonders where this sketch came from.
Yeah.
Like, did the producers write? I know UCB has a sketch program, so I'm wondering, did they take it from that?
Amazingly, nobody wants to put their name on it.
Nobody wants to put their name behind the new show with Dick Stifley.
No, apparently not. Okay, so they come out and they know that they were bad. Like the what was the worst part? What was the, in your mind, the worst sin that this group committed?
It was by far the last 20 seconds of the sketch, which was, I mean, the way the script follows is that that Lance Jenkins, the burn victim, is supposed to say, "Well, I guess my sense of humor must have burned up in the fire." Then Dick Stifley says, along with those eyebrows, and then Royce Bentley says, "Well, that's all the time we have for tonight," or whatever. He signs off. So then what happened with the business was that Jimmy interrupted Rodman. Rodman then starts talking a mile a minute under his breath to get his line out, which awkwardly leads into Ida saying her line like very off energy to him. And then Jimmy's just looking around bewildered, and DC Benny is just going, "Choo-choo." So, like, that was probably the worst part. Either that or when Rodman first starts talking, and it seems like he starts stuttering and fumbling his lines, and it looks like he almost is about to like break character and be like, can we start over? But then he actually gets into it.
Yeah. All right, so that was unfortunate. So Cheryl Hines, much like The Apprentice, she gets to make the judgment call here. By the way, we didn't talk about it earlier. What did you think of J.B. Smoove and Cheryl Hines' evil laugh?
It was interesting. I think Cheryl Hines kind of has that like evil laugh look. So I forget if she's ever played like one of those, you know,
Maleficent.
evil people before. She's not like Maleficent level, but one of those like, you know, those like tween movies, like a Cinderella Story 2, if she's played like the villain on that, because she does have a good villain look. J.B. Smoove doesn't, though. I want to not pass him for an evil genius any day of the week.
Because he looks like such a nice guy.
A nice, loud man.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, we find out that Cheryl Hines says there was one team that listened to her and each mm-hmm. other better than the other team, and that team was the Sketchy Snakes. So the business knows they're going to lose. So now, Mike, in Last Comic Standing history, is this pretty much how this would work, where one whole team has immunity?
Not at all.
Okay.
I think there may have been a couple challenges where two people get immunity, but those are like pair challenges. But there's never been an episode or a challenge where half of the contestants are immune.
Okay.
But I'm also trying to think. I don't think they actually do a lot of team challenges either.
All right. So basically, one of the teams is going to go and lose 40% of their team in this competition. So, all right. So we're back to classic Last Comic Standing, where you have to say, I know I'm funnier, or I think I'm funnier than another person. And mm-hmm. so we end up going through everybody. The rules are a little complicated here because five people are immune. You can't say those people, but they still get to vote. Should they have gotten to vote? I felt like it was very confusing to have, you know, Lachlan Patterson and Carlos Miller in the mix for voting when they couldn't be in the competition.
You know what? For the sake of production, I would say it's fine. I mean, obviously, again, we haven't had a situation like this before, but the one or two people that have been immune in the past have been able to vote. I mean, I think if you only have the five voting, it also would have been a pretty open and shut case who would be going in. I think having these other five vote kind of throws in a rogue element, which we saw with people throwing away their votes. So, I mean, let them vote. I think, unfortunately, it kind of ended up screwing someone like Rodman. But, I mean, hopefully from here on out, they won't have more than one person immune per challenge.
Yeah. Now, why didn't the five people that were immune all put their votes on somebody that they were afraid of? Like, are you telling me that they were afraid of Jimmy Schubert?
Last Comic Standing is very... I think the one thing, it's kind of like BBUK.
You're not allowed to talk about alliances?
Yeah, I think they're very anti-alliance and very anti-strategy. The only real strategy that I think people are going with, other than this person annoyed me, was like, well, this person can be a threat. So I think, I also don't know what their timetable was between the challenge and voting. They could have just been bussed right to the improv and had to cast their votes from there, so they couldn't even talk about it with each other. So I'm pretty sure producers are encouraging them not to collude, because that's kind of not the spirit of this competition.
Now, okay, so everybody ends up voting, and there ends up being four votes for Jimmy, and those votes come from Ida, no surprise. But mm-hmm. then I thought there's tell me if you is there an alliance here, potentially Rodman, then Nikki Carr, Carlos Miller, then Nikki Carr, then Rodman, all vote for Jimmy Schubert in a row.
I mean, yeah, it could be. Again, we don't know how much time was between the two segments. It could have been that also Rodman kind of vented to the other contestants, or Ida did, or anyone of them did, about like how much of a pain Jimmy was to work with. So they're thinking like, okay, Jimmy's kind of an ass, let's vote for him. I still think it was an independent decision, but Rodman might have just gotten, but Rodman and Ida could have gotten some people on their side by kind of talking about how Jimmy Schubert was not the most fun person to be with.
It seemed like the old guy alliance was happening with Jimmy and Rocky and at DC, probably to a lesser degree. It was almost like Jimmy and Rocky had like a final two deal. And then DC was sort of like along for the ride with them. So those three guys, they end up all voting together as well. All three of them vote for Ida.
Yeah, I think the three of them probably felt, I don't want to say disrespected, but they probably were turned off by Ida, because at least from what we saw in the episode, it seemed like Ida was kind of turned off to this idea of like, oh, these veterans don't like me, they don't respect me, and then Ida kind of brings up the gender thing a little bit later as well. So I think it's definitely kind of a disconnect between these veterans and someone like Ida. So that kind of drove them to vote for her.
Okay, a couple of votes that seem like they were throwaways. You tell me what you think. Joe Maki votes for Rocky Laporte.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the biggest throwaway vote that's ever happened in Last Comic Standing was that Gabriel Iglesias, who ended up getting disqualified from the show for breaking the rules, but is actually a pretty famous alumni now, he literally had a bowl with names in it, and on camera he would reach into the bowl and pick out a name. So he's probably the biggest example of a throwaway vote, but I would say that I don't think Joe thought that Rocky was going to go in.
Yeah. And then we also had Monroe Martin. He voted for DC Benny.
Yeah, well, you know what? Maybe he saw a possible foster father in DC, so he wanted to kind of distance himself from him.
Okay. And then the other one that was sort of an odd vote was Lachlan Patterson voted for Rodman.
Well, he also voted for the guy at Subway.
Attila the Hun,
and Hall, but not Oates, which I take offense to, because yeah. I enjoy Daryl Hall quite a bit.
Hasn't this joke been done before on Last Comic Standing?
I don't remember if it's been done to this, like, to make a list of it. I think people have been like, you know I'm funnier than Dan Quayle, but I also know I'm funnier than Rodman. So I mean, like, there was a weird thing where, like, people were, like, high-fiving Lachlan, and Lachlan's like, yeah, I know, guys, that was a great joke. And I was like, ah, I can't stand you.
Okay. So we end up with four votes here for Jimmy. Now, Jimmy's in a sort of a precarious spot here because, okay, we know he's going to take Ida. He voted for Ida. He knows he's funnier than Ida. But yeah. Carlos is immune. And Nikki Carr is immune also, so that only leaves Rodman as the only other person that voted for Jimmy.
Yeah, so if Rodman made this alliance with Nikki and Carlos, then his alliance just screwed him.
They did screw him. And so Rodman, as he said, I got sucked in by technicality. And so Rodman, I believe he's a technicalities plural.
Yeah, Rodman... Just on a side tangent about Rodman, he kind of reminds me of John Cochran, you know, the lawyer Johnny Cochran on some sort of speed.
Oh.
That's what he reminds me of, just because of his like elocution and the use of his words. But he's so hyper, it makes me feel like it's Johnny Cochran who like just did a line.
Whoa! Well, and you don't mean a line of dialogue for the sketchy snakes.
Yeah, my sense of humor must have burned in the fire.
There you go. All right, so we're gonna get to talking about the challenge round, the head to head, and talk about all three of the comedians at the improv. But first, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the Last Comic Standing podcast, and those are our friends over at DraftKings.com. Now, of course, all of our listeners who come back week after week, you all know that we like to give out a hashtag. We saw not a lot of hashtags this week, Mike. We saw that there were the sketchy snakes. And was that it? Was that the only hashtag in the episode?
That was the only one that I saw aside from Last Comic.
Or was it sketchy situation?
No, I think it was sketchy snakes.
Okay. All right. So do you have a hashtag that would be appropriate to talk about here as we talk about DraftKings.com?
Well, if we're going off of the alliteration and the whole idea of something being a little underground, a little little weaselly. I'm going to go with hashtag the Wily Willies.
The Wily Willies. Okay.
The Wily Willies.
All right. Well, everybody knows that DraftKings.com is America's favorite one-day fantasy baseball site. People are winning all sorts of big prizes by playing fantasy baseball and starting off with as little money as it costs to get a kid from Ida Rodriguez.
And then you can sell that kid to those Wily Willies, and they'll be sure to bring it to a place that you'll never see him again.
People have won as much as $4,000 in one day. Somebody won $100,000 in their first time ever playing, and even $1,000,000 at DraftKings.com in one day, playing fantasy baseball at DraftKings.com.
$1,000,000? I mean, from what I've heard, you can touch the Wily Willies for $1,000,000.
And the great thing about DraftKings.com, it's one day fantasy baseball, so you don't have to worry about having a team that stinks, much like either the business. And so what you can do is change up your team every day, and you will always have immunity from having a crappy team when you pick the players you want every day to win instant cash.
The Wily Willies like to change themselves up too. Sometimes they're a little shaven, sometimes they're a little unkempt.
Right now, you can score free entry into DraftKings' biggest fantasy baseball contest of the year with $3 million in cash prizes. With $1 million for first place, enter ROB today at DraftKings.com for your free shot at hundreds, thousands, or even $1 million. Free spots are going quick, so enter ROB now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com.
And right. you will automatically subscribe yourself to the Wily Willies email list.
Okay, there you have it. So let's go to the improv here. And Mike, I was so excited that the site of the Survivor roast of Rob Cesternino was the site of tonight's head-to-head-to-head competition.
Yeah, in my heart of hearts, I believe that while the roast was going on, NBC was doing scout locations. And they were just hearing the guffaws erupting, and they saw, oh yeah, this is where it's going to be. This is the place where laughter occurs.
Yes. Now, when you heard this crowd at the improv, it was a rough crowd. They did not want to laugh at anything.
Yeah. Well, it's also, I mean, it's a different crowd. It's not, they might not necessarily have been a crowd that's brought in and producers are saying like, okay guys, remember to laugh. You know, it's not that crowd that they pump in for the big shows. These are probably people that have attended stand-up shows before and are regulars at the improv. So, you know, they're going to laugh at what they want to laugh at. They might not necessarily fall for a producer's whims as much as they want them to.
Is it true that this audience at the improv had just come from seeing John Fincher at the Survivor roast of Rob Cesternino, and that's why they were in a bad mood?
Yeah, that was the opener.
John Fincher opened for these guys?
He opened. And then Alex Stein came on and did a bit as well.
Oh, no. Oh,
so
no.
So they were pretty warm.
Yeah. All right. So J.B. Smoove comes on and sets this up. He calls Roseanne Queen Roseanne.
Yeah, I mean, she's ascended through the royalty ranks. So, I mean, she has to watch out, though. She's kind of like the Queen of Thorns at this point, I feel like.
So many nerdy Game of Thrones references in this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, you got to do something in the off season. It's been a long withdrawal period.
All right, so Jimmy Schubert goes up first. Did you think there was anything to the draw order?
I'm not exactly sure. I mean, it might just have, since Ida was kind of the one that was you know, lauded the most, I feel like the draft order didn't really matter, since arguably you would do like, okay, the opener kind of stinks and then it ramps up from there. So maybe Jimmy just went first because he had the most votes, and then Ida had the second most, so she went second. But I think Rodman definitely benefited from going third.
Yeah. So I thought so too. And do you think there was any manipulation of the order, or you feel like that's how it was?
I think that's how it was. But I mean, check out that spread backstage at the improv.
That was nice, right? What, they have so fruit many, salad and yeah, wrap sandwiches?
So many wraps.
Oh my God. The fitting for the last comic standing wrap up.
Yeah, exactly. They knew, again, they knew about how much RJP had an effect on the improv. So they said, we demand wraps and rap music playing beforehand and saran wrap to wrap up the leftovers.
Yeah. Yeah. So Jimmy Schubert comes out and he goes right into it. I got dumped by text message.
Jimmy. I mean, I'll probably rank this number two of his three bits that we've seen. It was a lot better than the, you know,
Drinky Time Cat.
Yeah, Drinky Time Squirrel.
Squirrel.
And I thought it was a lot better than the whole flying bit. I thought it definitely got better once he, quote unquote, went back in time. These bits were also notoriously shorter than anything we've seen. The preliminaries and semifinals bits were around like 5 minutes at an average length. These ones were only at about 1.5 to 2, which was interesting. I mean, obviously, they had a lot to pack into the show.
How long do you think that they gave them in total?
Well, that's the thing. Their full sets are on YouTube, and they're pretty much uncut.
Okay, how long are they?
About 1.5 to 2 minutes each.
Oh! I think you're saying on YouTube they're uncut. They said, okay, give us your best 3 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, I guess they...
Who has three minutes?
Well, that's the thing about how, you know, none of them ever were able to do more than one bit. So they just focused on, like, one bit. I don't know where in the comedy world do you have to go out and be like, okay, you have 2 minutes to do this bit. Go ahead. But... So they all kind of had to stick to their guns and pick one joke. I mean, I thought Jimmy's was pretty... It was, again, started off pretty hacky with the whole idea of text message breakups, which I feel like, as Russell Peters has said, it's a very stock joke in comedy nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
But then once he... I'll agree with Russell. Once he went into, you know, the quote-unquote Morris code and the Pocahontas smoke signals, I thought it got a little more... creative, and his energy definitely helped. He definitely had the audience on his side by the end.
Yeah. Would you be interested in seeing Jimmy Schubert's girlfriend that dumped him via text message?
All I have the image of is Jimmy Schubert in a dress, like with the exact same voice, the exact same like low, hoarse, yelling voice, and just the two of them screaming back and forth to each other as a plain conversation.
Okay. So... basically, you know, we get it, the text message dumping, and then he goes back through smoke signals and Morse code. The one thing I thought that was kind of clever was the stop in the Morse code, and
yeah.
Even that, I thought he probably hit it too hard.
Yeah, exactly. I think you could have said, you know, please stop, then, or like, please stop, and then that would have been it, instead of going like, no, seriously, stop, I mean it this time, stop, like...
Yeah, it was like, right, get it.
Yeah, Jimmy, you only have 2 minutes. You got to cut the fat a little bit.
Cut the fat. Okay. So then Roseanne loved it. Mm-hmm. And most of the judges, they really loved it, but they were concerned, did the audience connect?
Yeah, well, because that's the problem. Jimmy is a much larger comedian. I mean, his material is built for, like, stadiums. You know, where there's 50 screens around him showing what he's doing, he might not have the energy. So when he kind of like the way he was in the sketch, when you come right off the bat being like manic energy, it doesn't really pass over well in a small theater crowd.
Yeah, I thought so too. Let's talk about Ida. And so have you ever Googled Ida Rodriguez?
I was going to ask. I thought you were going to ask if I Googled myself.
Yeah.
I haven't Googled Ida Rodriguez. I have Googled myself, and the search yearns. There's a musician named Mike Bloom that's pretty popular on like both Facebook and YouTube. So he monopolizes the majority of the time. But I have not Googled Ida Rodriguez, know her various felonies.
Hey, Family Dollar could pay former exec Mike Bloom nearly $4.8 million.
Oh, yeah, that's the big news story now, is that there's the former executive Mike Bloom of Family Dollar. So,
and he was clearly on Undercover Boss.
Fun fact, actually, about just randomly off the topic. When I saw the first episode of Arrested Development and the first words out of the narrator's mouth were Michael Bluth, I was like, wait, did I mishear something? Because I could have sworn for the next like 10 minutes that my name was on Arrested Development.
Okay. there is another Rob Cesternino. And so,
oh, really?
Yes. And it does probably suck to be that guy.
Yeah, he is the true Rob that sucks.
Yeah, it really does suck to be that guy. So that's probably not fun for him at all.
No, no. He's living in another Rob's shadow.
Okay. So let's talk about Ida's set. I thought she really struggled.
Yeah. I've always been kind of down on her because I just feel like her material really isn't that strong. And I thought her material was fine, but compared to, Jimmy was marginally better than her, but compared to someone like Rodman, when you know that only one person is getting through, like, she was pretty much done for.
Yeah. And I felt bad because, she really seemed like she was down. I thought Roseanne lightened the mood talking about Tom Arnold a little bit.
You always got to lighten the mood by talking about Tom Arnold.
Yeah, that was good. But, I don't want to beat up on Ida Rodriguez.
No, it's clear that she was, I think she was also, part of me also thinks she was still a little huffy. We don't know what the timetable is between the challenge and the voting and everything. We saw during the voting that she was pretty feisty when her voice got shown and she was like clapping her hands like, yep, I said it. I'm a woman, which also makes me think that
she might have said that earlier.
Well, or that she thinks that the reason why people like Jimmy didn't really respect her is because she's a woman. Mm-hmm. And obviously we've talked a lot about the role that women have played in comedy, and there are some veteran male comics out there who still don't necessarily treat women in comedy as their equal. So she may have thought about that. I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but when they had those backstage bits, Jimmy and Ida barely interacted with each other.
Yeah, she had a couple of chips on her shoulder. The one that she was the only woman on her team. Also, it was the fact that she had the least experience out of all of the comedians. So it seemed like she definitely carried that with her.
Yeah, so she was, I think like Jimmy, she was also very tired and that kind of, so, the exhaustion on top of the bad mood, on top of the not so solid set and reception kind of led to this very low energy, and she kind of sucked in the rest of the audience with that.
Yeah, I thought so too. All right, let's talk about Rodman and very, very fun stuff from Rodman, talking about his stepdad, Frank, was an angry little dude and had a glass eye.
So now I'm wondering, so by little dude, does he actually mean like little person, or does he just mean that he's like a short, like a Danny DeVito, just like a short, angry person?
I thought more of a short person than somebody who was actually to continue your theme here, a Tyrion Lannister.
Yeah, I was going to say, like Rodman says, well, my stepdad, he showed up in a box from a boat.
Yeah.
And he married my mom.
So, yeah, I think that he was just a smaller guy.
Yeah, that's what I think too, which honestly makes more sense because the guys who are like short but not necessarily little people have a lot of anger issues to begin with, and then throw the glass on top of that. And Frank is clearly not living the ideal life he wants to.
Well, it sounds like that Frank is getting into a lot of fights because not only is he getting in a fight here, I suspect that maybe that he lost the real eye in another fight.
That's true. I mean, it's not like, your eye's not like your appendix. It's not like you're suddenly walking around and suddenly your eye bursts and falls out. Like, you need to lose it pretty, pretty hardcore because it has to be like severed from the optic nerve from the eye socket. So looks like Frank might have gotten into one too many arguments in the bars.
Yeah, that's what it seems like to me. Of the sets we've seen of Rodman, where did you rank this one?
I'm trying. I mean, it honestly, I liked the story, but unfortunately, I feel like Rodman went back to his old habits of being very, very wordy. I mean, there was that period of like 20 seconds when it was just him repeatedly hitting himself in the face and just going like, saying the same words during his bit. So I feel like he could have lost a lot of the wordiness again, especially when he only had 2 minutes. I think he's personally more of an observational comic than a story comic. I thought his first set where he was just talking about his observations on the stores and the markets and the self-checkout was by far his strongest. This seemed like a fun story, and he was definitely the strongest set of the three people who went in the head-to-head, but I think he should go more towards observations. That's his strong suit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I really, really enjoyed this, and it was very, very fun. Looking forward to seeing Rodman go far into the competition. Is Rodman the guy to beat right now?
See, that's the thing, too, is that a lot of these winners of Last Comic Standing have the public. I mean, granted, this is when the public used to vote for Last Comic Standing back in those days. They always used to pick someone who went into at least one head-to-head before the live voting. So it's kind of like when you intentionally Matt Singh, for example, to raise a red flag on Stephen Fischbach and Josh Wigler's Twitter feeds.
Yes.
You get kind of a spike in airtime, and therefore the fan favorites tend to come more from those tribes because you get to see a lot more of them. We got to see a lot more of Rodman tonight than we got to see of someone like Carlos Miller or Monroe Martin. And that's going to mean really great if he gets to those live rounds. And we don't know how those are working, but if America votes people through to the finals, he has a really good shot just because America's kind of seen what he can do.
Yeah. All right. So we'll see exactly what happens in the future. Is there anybody that you would put higher than Rodman in the power rankings?
I put Joe Mackey above there. I'm very high on Joe Mackey. Though, I mean, at this point, I really like nearly everyone left in the competition. The only two people that I would not like to see win are Lachlan and probably Carlos Miller.
Okay. Yeah, Carlos Miller didn't do a lot tonight.
Well, did you? The only thing I noticed was that in his weird wig, he looked like Cat Williams.
Yeah, I thought so too.
So Cat Williams is making his appearance on all these NBC sketch shows.
Yes. All right. So no episode next Thursday. We got the 2-hour show, which is going to be on Sunday night. If there's anything worth checking out there, we will be back. Do we know what the comedians are doing? Oh, they're going to Ellen next, right?
Yep. So next week is going to be an interview with Ellen. So Wanda Sykes is coming back as the mentor, which is interesting because now we've seen her the past 3 weeks out of four. So she's really getting her face out there. Okay. I'm not sure what the interview will entail, if they're plugging something, if they're just talking to her. Ellen seemed a little just like the shots we saw of Ellen. She just seemed kind of there. She didn't seem very excited.
Yeah, I think she's doing a favor to Wanda Sykes, I think.
Yeah, she's kind of phoning it in. So we'll see how much tact people have with Ellen next week. Okay. Or 2 weeks from now.
All right, we're looking forward to it. So follow Mike Bloom on Twitter. He's a Mike Bloom type. And then I think you broke your own rule with a hard-to-spell hashtag.
I mean, that's the joke, though, isn't it?
Okay. So what is it again? Wild Willies?
It's Wiley Willies.
Wiley Willies. Okay.
Oh, do we want to talk for a second about Comic Comeback?
Yes. Who's up for grabs this week?
So it turns out we have the Taylor Cotter bump has beat the RHEP bump this week. Alingon Mitra took out our boy Nick Guerra. So he's up against Jimmy Schubert. I guess apparently the producers decided that Jimmy was worth more than Ida.
Okay.
So now it's a Lingon versus Jimmy.
Boy, yeah, that Taylor Cotter bump was huge.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's the Boston Strong, you know? First Jason and Boston. Amy, now a Lingon Mitra.
Okay, I would vote for a Lingon Mitra over Jimmy Schubert.
Yeah, again, I just watched their bits right before we recorded. A Lingon had, and these are also, it's also good to know that these are different bits week after week. Alingon's bit this week talks a lot about how he does not have nearly enough friends, and then it segues into jokes about Rufio from the movie Hook, and so he's got a pretty solid one. And then Jimmy Schubert kind of does his thing fine, but it's in his Jimmy Schubert kind of a shouty energy. So I am backing Alingon at this point. Hopefully I'm not cursed and this means that he moves on.
Okay, the Mike Bloom curse. Okay. All right. Well, Mike, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun. We'd love to know what you guys think in the comments on robhasawebsite.com. Subscribe to RHAP at robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye.